Good morning. This is Humanity Meets Business, Business Therapy with Christine Salvo. Today, I'm so excited about my guest, Allison Pina, AKA Bad Widow. She's a consultant, a best-selling author, and speaker from New York City. She became a primary caregiver during her husband's 11-month battle with pancreatic cancer and a widow. When he died in her arms at home in 2016, Allison learned to live fearlessly in the face of death. She discovered how to move through grief, reclaim autonomy, reinvent herself, and rebuild her networks back to life in work and even love. So thank you so much for being here, Allison. I am so excited to have you here. In our little pre-talk, you said something, and I mean, it already shook me to the core. We are experiencing a global grief experience. I actually hadn't heard it put in that way, but what a powerful way to say what we're going through. So thank you already for just bringing that to the show. But maybe we can start with telling our listeners a little bit about you and your own journey through grief and kind of how you're using that to help others now.
Absolutely. I grew up in New York, as you said, and when we spoke, you said you like to hear a little bit about the origin. So when I was 25, I had a younger brother who was 23 who died of a heart attack connected with a genetic enzyme deficiency. So I actually have pretty early experience with grief. In 2015, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And in 2016, he lost the battle and he died in my arms at home. And I was a widow. We had been together for 25 years. And the first year was what I described as a wasteland of grief. And the second year was zero to rage in 5 seconds. And when you're going through that level of overwhelming feelings and chaos, I couldn't trust my energy. I couldn't trust my memory. And I couldn't focus on anything. So it was hard to work. It was hard to connect with people. I was a coach who couldn't coach. I was a proofreader and editor who had no memory, no energy, and no ability to focus. So suddenly
I see how that would present a problem.
Yeah, I was this capable, you know, very effective, very energetic and busy person. And then I wasn't in a minute.
Wow.
And what it created in me was a deep distrust of myself, my own body, my own mind, the people around me, and what the world had for me in the way of possibilities. We were talking about this grief crisis that we're in the middle of. Grief is one of the biggest pandemics we have going forward. People are grieving the loss of people. We just passed 800,000 people.
Right.
Dead of COVID. And each of those people impacts at least 8 others. So if you think about the numbers, that's unbelievable. That number of people grieving all at the same time. People have lost businesses, lost jobs, lost homes. All of these losses we're grieving. And we're not really taught what to do with that. So what winds up happening is that the person in the middle of the grief feels really alone. Mm-hmm. It's this raw place. And because we're not comfortable with tears, and a person who's grieving might burst into tears over coffee, we don't really want to be around that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the people who love and want to support those people, they're trying, they're doing their best, they care, but they don't actually know what it's like. And so they keep getting what they say and what they do wrong.
Give me an example of that. Give me help me understand that a little better.
Okay. I heard a lot in that first year, if I would start to cry, someone would say, I didn't mean to make you cry. And I might snap back at them because inside my head, I'm thinking, I just lost the man that I loved for 25 years. I went from two incomes to one income in New York. I have my husband's studio. He was a professional artist with hundreds and hundreds of paintings that I need to close up. When I walk in there and the smell of oil paint and clove together break my heart. And so when they would say, I didn't mean to make you cry, I might snap at them because my thought was, I have much bigger problems than you.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then, the problem with that is that then that person thinks, oh my gosh, I really messed this up. And they step back or they step out of your life.
So true.
Yeah. And they're doing their best, but they're getting it wrong because nobody communicates about this. Bad Widow came about because I wanted to blow up the wrong assumptions that people were making, even though they were doing their best. And I wanted to provide a way to make it better. Another thing that happened a lot is people would say, how are you? And I would think, well, my entire life just blew up. How do you think? You know, honestly, what do you mm-hmm. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that they were really doing the best they could. And I also realized that I could answer a question with a shorter time frame. So I could answer, how are you now? Or how are you today?
Hmm.
From my perspective, I didn't have a future. The future I had dreamed up with my husband was gone. I couldn't see a future to build. I mean, I honestly didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. I didn't know who I was. I'd been with the same man for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what I began to do was I began to, because I'm a person who deconstructs my own experience to serve others.
Mm-hmm.
And what kept going through my head was, this pain must serve. I cannot suffer this deeply without it serving somebody else too. And so I began figuring my way through this grief, through the middle of it, and communicating about it as I went.
Okay.
So the first thing that I discovered is that after we are hurt, and when we're grieving a loss, we tend to contract. What that means is less interactions with other people, less activities. We just don't have the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting back out into the world is a conscious act. And this is one of my concerns about the global grief. We all contracted, went into our homes in many places because we had to. Stepping back out will require an act of courage. That's re-engage. Begin to test the boundaries that you've made smaller and make them bigger again. For us, it started with getting on ferries and going on rides places because we could be outside, but we were actually going somewhere. So we didn't have dates because nothing in New York City was open.
Mm-hmm.
So we did bus dates, we did ferry dates, we did walking dates. That's what we had. But what it allowed us to do was push out against our fear and push out into the world again and make a bigger world, because there comes a tipping point where you want to take back your life. But it's not that easy when you're grieving.
Right.
The second thing was to reinvent myself. In 25 years with someone, you're wound around each other like vines. And at the beginning of a relationship, you make compromises that you might not make later. So there were things that I'd given up because my husband didn't love doing them that I've taken back.
Okay.
I love open mics. Open mic singing, open mic poetry. My husband didn't. So gradually, I did less and less of that. And in the last 11 months of his life and since, I've taken back singing because I recognized I needed to move the grief through my body, or it was going to get stuck. So reinvent was a process of making decisions very quickly, just trying things. Do I like this? Do I not like this? And building a life for myself as a widow, because I didn't know what that was. So it was literally an invention, a new invention. Very often what happens, and this is the great resignation that we're seeing, I believe is born a lot out of grief. Because when you're grieving, what matters rises to the surface.
Absolutely. Before you get too far past this, I want to tell you that I actually hear this all the time. I'm dealing with grief pretty much on a daily basis with my career. And I can't tell you how often I hear people say, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. And one of the most frustrating emotions that I see people feel is that I don't even, and they'll say it usually in a belittling way, I don't even know who I am. I don't even know what I like. I don't even know anything about me. And there's a little bit of that self-abandonment or compromise or whatever it is that comes up of like, dang it, I should have kept something for myself. And there's this other side of like, where do I even start? So I love that you're elaborating on this because it's not necessarily a common knowledge conversation.
No, it's not.
And sometimes people that are grieving have just like this underlying irritability. And what it is what you're talking about. It's like, I'm just uncomfortable and I don't know why. And it's moving that energy, like you said, moving the grief through your body so it doesn't get stuck. So yes, please keep going. I just really wanted to say, like, this is so powerful to hear your process and recognizing it in my own practice.
Yeah, it's so essential to realize that bouncing back is actually a myth. Okay. From any transition, any grief moment, you're no longer the same person before and after. So there's a seismic shift that happens with grief that is heartbreaking and heart opening. But it's not that easy to see because we have this idea that we can just, if we can just get back on track, I just want to get back to where I was. I mean,
right.
I couldn't do anything. I literally was writing everything that I did in my life, in all aspects of my life, on a board because I couldn't remember anything. But if I could look at that board and go, well, I can do this today. I have enough energy to do that today. I could create a net for myself for a breakdown that I was experiencing.
Okay.
The last sort of piece of the process. So there's re-engage, get back into the world. There's reinvent, figure out who the heck you are after the loss. And then there's rebuild your networks. So people step up, step back, or step out of your life with every transition or loss. And a lot of the times people, when they're grieving, they lose people because they're snapping back or they're making people uncomfortable because they're so emotional. And so we typically will hear something like, just calm down or control yourself.
Right.
And what's not understood is it's not controllable.
Or even as you said, like sometimes it's just a change in subject.
Yep.
Right. Like a brushing over. Like, anyways, my sandwich is really delicious. And really, you know, grief people in the depths of their grief sometimes can feel really invalidated, unseen and unheard. So it's like, wait, did you not just hear what I just said? Okay, let's talk about sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And what they're doing is they're not wanting to make you uncomfortable because they think it will make it worse. And in all honesty, it's such an individual journey that people need different things at different times. So there might be a moment where it's really tender and they actually don't want to talk about it. But people who have lost a person to death, they're heartbroken, but they're not broken. And one of the issues with loss and how we treat people who have experienced losses of all kinds is we treat them like they're broken. So what do you do with broken things? You fix them.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're in a global crisis and pretty much everyone's broken and everyone needs to be fixed, then we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. Amen to that.
Right?
I always like,
serious trouble.
I actually love when people tell me they're broken because I go, can you show me where? And they're like, what? And I'm like, well, I mean, broken is it's typically physical and visual. I can tell when something's broken. So show me where you're broken. And they're like, well, I can't. And I'm like, well, you're probably not broken then. I mean, you're hurting, you're in pain. There's something wrong. I'm not denying that, but broken, I don't know about that.
Well, exactly. But it feels like that.
For sure.
I mean, it feels like you're broken open and broken apart and shattered. The thing about networks is that the person that you were before the network, you may not need the same network that you did before. You may actually need to rebuild the network as you reinvented yourself, because what you desire in your life is different. But we typically look at networks as for business referrals, and that's it. That's how we think of networks. When okay. my husband died, what I realized was he filled so many places in my life. And when he died, my network was not designed to hold all of that up. What I began to do was I began to look at my network for what activities did I want to do and what kinds of people did I want to be around, and did they exist in the community that I was surrounded by? And then if they didn't, I began looking to who would step up or who outside my network I wanted to invite in. This is immensely powerful mm-hmm. because you can actually create something that holds up your entire life. Who are you going to go for a drink with? Who likes the same kind of exercise? There are people I go to open mics with.
Mm-hmm.
I do open mic poetry with my mom, but I do open mic singing with somebody else. I have different people who like different kinds of exercise. So I began rebuilding the network to support the life that I was creating. And that's kind of the three steps: re-engage, reinvent, and rebuild. And this is something that everyone needs to go through. At a certain point, I decided that I was not willing to live the rest of my life without love. And that was the hardest thing of all.
Mm-hmm.
That was the hardest boundary to push because it felt like the biggest betrayal of my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And we trust our body chemistry to let us know if we like people. But my body chemistry was only accustomed to the touch of my husband, to his arm around my waist. And so anyone else's arm felt wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have a reaction, like, don't touch me, get away. And then I would have to explain and communicate.
Mm-hmm.
The most powerful thing about this moment in time when I started stepping out and dating was I had to take responsibility for my own stuff. When I had an outsized reaction that made no sense, I had to ask myself, is it me, is it him, or is it us? The key to those questions was then I knew what to do next. Because knowing the next step is awesome, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that was really critical. The other thing about grief that I think is really, really important that I want to share here is that, especially when I was opening up to love, the joy and the grief rose at the same time in almost equal measure. So if I experience joy, if I experience desire of any kind, oh, I'd like to kiss this person. The grief rose big and hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to come to the point where I realized that that didn't mean that it wasn't joy. That's just how they came at this point in my life. It still happens that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to give your audience a few tips about the holidays.
Please, yeah.
Because holidays are really hard for people who are grieving.
Mm-hmm.
One is grief has a really long timeline. So at the end of the first year, typically everyone leaves. But the second year is where the person stops being numb and realizes that they will never see that person again. Yeah. Never touch them again. And it lands at home and mm-hmm. everybody's left. So staying connected across quite a long period of time is really important. If a person who is grieving has a network, it's really helpful to set kind of a schedule, because it needs to not land all on one person. But if you can have, okay, well, why don't you give a call next week and I'll call the week after, so that there's some continuity of connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because grief takes you out of the flow of life itself.
Right.
It's much harder to work. It's much harder to keep and maintain your relationships. It's much harder to go out. And so staying connected with life, even if you call and the person doesn't call you back, matters over quite a long period of time. September 10th of this year was my 5-year anniversary of my husband's death.
Mm-hmm.
The week before, I was in tears pretty much for a week. He died at 10:10 in the morning in my arms, September 10th, 2016. At 10:11, I was fine. For a week before that, I was a basket case.
Mm-hmm.
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the journey is very individual, but it's also communal. If someone who is bereaved is coming to a holiday event, it's really helpful to find out what they need. Hey, I know this just happens, because if it's recent, it's the biggest thing in their world.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want me to handle it? Shall I share stories about that person? That's nice sometimes. Do you want to not talk about it? You know, give them permission to, hey, I'll understand if you start getting emotional and need to leave the table.
Mm-hmm.
Or even leave entirely. I won't be offended if that happens.
Right.
So really allow people who are grieving the permission to be where they are. When I was in the midst of my grief, I said, in the middle of this event, I might cry. Know that I'm okay. And I'll take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you know what I need. But I'm okay. You don't need to worry. Because what I realized was all the anxiousness was that they wanted me to be okay.
Yeah.
And they wanted to know what to do, and they didn't know.
Right.
So if I could give them some guidelines, everyone could relax a little bit more.
I think that's an excellent point and idea. Because you're right. You know, I think there's times in our lives where we are more likely to experience more grief than others. And that's obviously as we age and as certain things happen. But we're not all at the same age and stage at the same time. And when you're going through a significant loss, whether that's a spouse, a best friend, a partner, a close family member, even the coworkers, you know, our relationships are our relationships. And it doesn't necessarily matter the social label that we give them. If we care, we care. And if we're grieving, we're grieving.
Yes.
And really looking at that, because I think sometimes, especially when we're dealing with employment issues, it's like there's levels. Oh, mm-hmm. Was it immediate family? No. It was my, you know, best friend's dad. that I grew up with for 25 years. Nope, that doesn't qualify. Like, excuse me. Wow, you know, this person taught me how to ride a bike, or I had significant memories and a lifelong relationship with them. But because I wasn't blood related, where even sometimes our blood related relatives were like, I haven't seen them in 25 years and we were never close. So really kind of looking at this idea of, if it matters to you, it matters.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a social label. And if people start kind of minimizing your grief or your experience because it wasn't a blood-related relative or someone they would consider like a spouse, right? We understand spouse. We all get it. 25 years, oh my God, that's your whole life. That's most of your adult life you've spent with this person. Get it.
Yeah.
But best friend, coworker, boss, and as you said, you know, if you know, 800,000 people, this is a significant impact across the board. And if this is your first experience of death versus your 10th experience of death, or your relationship and your levels and your degrees, I feel like the most popular phrase, and I didn't coin this, this is a book written by somebody else, but it's okay to not be okay. And really just driving that home, it is okay to not be okay.
Yes.
It really needs to be okay to not be okay. Because I know too many people are like, well, I just don't want to bring everyone down. I just don't want everyone looking at me with that look in their eyes. And so I put on a smiley face and I go to the thing and I act like everything's okay. And I feel like a fake and a farce. And like, I'm doing all of this. It takes so much effort to be there for other people. And in essence, for people that are grieving, it's actually not your job to take care of everyone else right now. It's your job to take care of yourself and let others take care of you. So kind of resetting that balance a little bit.
Absolutely. The deciding how deep the loss is for another person is absurd. If you can allow a person who's grieving to be sad, then they have space to also be happy.
I love that. Yeah, if you can allow them to be sad, there's also space to be happy. Well, gosh, this is such a needed and necessary conversation that we had today. So thank you for sharing so much about your personal experience, your tips, your tricks, your tools, and especially, you know, specifically for this holiday time when it's really difficult for people. So if my listeners want to find you, if they want to know more, how could they get a hold of you, Allison?
The best way to find me is I have a website called badwidow.com. Very easy. HTTPS, badwidow.com. And you can find all kinds of resources there. And you can also reach out, book a call with me, find my book, everything.
All the things. Awesome. Well, I am wishing you and yours a peaceful, loving, gentle, amazing holiday. And thank you so much again for coming on the show and sharing such a heartfelt, beautiful message and helping people that are grieving with some things, some tips, but also family and friends that have and know someone that's grieving on tips and tricks. And I think really it's all about both sides of the coin and supporting everyone. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Continue. I mean, I love meeting people and that are really making and impacting the world in a positive way, sharing, like you said, this pain must serve, and using what you've gone through to really help others navigate probably the most difficult times of their lives.
You are very welcome.
Awesome. This has been Humanity Meets Business, Business Therapy with Christine Salvo, licensed marriage and family therapist, advanced certified mediator, and master practitioner of NLP and hypnosis. Thank you so much for listening. Take care of each other. Thank you. Bye-bye.